casa con él. Y cuando amanezca tú de plata y de cobre, vista el firmamento un barco de flores. Río de azúcar, cuántas veces hemos pasado conversando con la luna y estando los tres callados sentaditos en tu cintura.
This is Riley, and you are listening to YAO, Youth Arts Underground. I am joined by my co-host,
Victoria,
and the well, introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Briseida Sarate. Brisi, Bri is fine too. And I'm a flamenco dancer, teacher, and vocalist based out of Los Angeles.
All right. You dance as a very specific kind of dance, would you like to?
Yeah. I fell in love with flamenco about 18 years ago now. I was a freshman at UCLA. I was really like intrigued by one particular performance. I've been a dancer since I was a little girl, and I knew that that's what I wanted to do. But when I saw this particular dance, flamenco, it just totally... it surprised me, and that was that. I just saw it. I liked the footwork. I liked the fact that the woman dancing it, and women in general, when they dance it, they're really powerful, and it also very beautiful and powerful and graceful at the same time. Mm-hmm. I liked the percussive aspect of it, as well as the emotional aspect, because there was a singer that night, and he was just wailing, and she was just dancing to the singing. And then, of course, my favorite instrument in the world is the guitar and the acoustic guitar. So flamenco has that as well, and I'd never heard the guitar played that way. So that same week, I signed up for my first flamenco dance class. And
Can you describe what flamenco is?
Oh, sure, sure. So flamenco is a dance from Spain, specifically from the south of Spain, and it is a dance that is it is more than a dance. It's a culture, and it has obviously like transcended Spain, and now it's international.
actually reading up on it, I read that there are actually, like, now there are more schools in Japan than there are in Spain.
Exactly. And here too. And exactly. Yeah,
it's been, I think it was, I can't remember. It was voted as like a cultural treasure.
Yes. Just recently, actually, I think it was in 2010, actually, where UNESCO declared it a World Heritage to Humanity. So it's, and the reason that, you know, when you go on their site, you see why. It's because it's a very technically sophisticated art form. However, it is still from a culture, and it's not inaccessible. It's still accessible, and people can still, obviously, because it comes from, actually, it comes from southern Spain, but I didn't say that. The gypsies are the ones who have really just spearheaded flamenco, and some would say invented it, if not just, you know, spearheaded it. But I'm kind of like all over the place, but what I wanted to say is that yes, it's all over the world now. And
what's the style, what's the technique behind flamenco?
Oh my god. So like I was saying, it's a very sophisticated and at the same time really synchronized art form, where the dancer, the guitarist, and the singer have to work in perfect rhythmic unison. It's performed live, and there are many rhythms, some say 48, 50, and within those rhythms there are a lot of variations, so it's very rich rhythmically. And then there's the emotional aspect, where each rhythm has its own interpretation, and it comes from there's a lot of happy dances, but then, you know, there's a lot of really sad ones where you really have to, like, dig deep and really represent, like, the actual style that you're dancing. So it's, interpretively, it's also very demanding. The part that is very simple of it, and the part that, you know, anybody can relate to, is just the fact that it is very emotional and emotive. So whatever you're whatever the dancer is feeling, you don't have to think about that. Like, as an audience member, you just feel it. So that's the part I think that's really universal, and why people love it, is because it's like, you know, makes you really,
it's breathtaking.
It's there. That's what I just said, right? As, yeah. That's what that is.
It is. It's a very powerful kind of dance. It's a very precise, very
full of passion. There we go. Breathtaking, passionate. Those are the words right there. Yeah. Totally.
You know, can you describe your experience in it? I mean, your training, how you've gotten where you are?
So after I fell in love with it that one night at the show at UCLA, I started studying it immediately. I took to it. Like, I just took to it. Like, a fish in water. I mean, there's a lot to work on, but, you know, I didn't care. I wanted to just work as many hours in the studio as I needed. It didn't matter. So I quickly decided to go to Spain, because I knew that's where I would get, you know, trained really well. So I traveled to Spain for the first time. Mind you, at this point, I'd already graduated from UCLA, and I was a school teacher at that time. And I was scared to become a dancer full time, even though I remembered that I said I would when I was 9 years old. I knew that that's what I wanted to do. But, you know, my parents, God bless them, but they're immigrants from Mexico. And when they came here, you know, they wanted, you know, quote unquote, the American dream, which was, you know, make a little cash, make some money, a lawyer, doctor type of thing, you know.
They wanted a sort of stable career.
Yeah, because they're farm workers. And so their work has never been stable. And they've done a very good job of providing for us. However, like, they didn't want us to have to go through all that, you know, and that's why they came here. That was the point, the whole point. So they weren't very happy with my choice. I called them, said, I'm teaching my, you know, I'm leaving my teaching position, and I'm leaving to Spain. And my boyfriend was not happy either. And yeah, I got a lot of, there was a lot of friends who were like, yeah, go for it. And then there were, you know, the family and other people who were like, what are you talking about? Like, you don't even look like a flamenco dancer. No. Like, meaning that at that point, I just, I don't know. I guess I was like a little bit overweight or something, and people thought I should be skinny to dance with my go. I don't know, whatever. But I just didn't, they didn't see how the transformation was going to happen. But so I went to Spain, and that was the first time I traveled there, and I studied my butt off, and also just learned a lot about their culture, and came back and started teaching, performing, and sharing it with people, and it's been 18 years since then.
And what are you doing now?
I've always gone to Spain to be a better artist, and then to come back and to share, you know, with my audiences and my students. And I've always gone on my own dime, because my parents taught me that, you know, you got to work for everything. This time around, because I'm just starting now to apply for grants and think that it's okay to actually ask for help, you know, because in Mexican culture, you have a lot of pride and you don't ask anybody for help. If like you're like dying on the street, you just don't dare, you know. So, but I'm over it now. Having been an artist now for, you know, 6 years going on 10, you know, after my, like, I'm over that part. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, artists in general should be, we should have the support to
be allowed to be helped.
Yes, absolutely. So, so this time around, I want to, it's been 6 years since my last trip, since my last journey to Spain, and I want to return this time. I put a project up on Indiegogo, which is a really cool funding platform.
Yeah.
Right? And the name of my project is called, it's kind of long, but whatever. It's called A Flamenca's Rite of Passage, Journey to the Heart of Spain. I called it a rite of passage because I'm a little bit older now. I was 19, 20 when I started this dance, and I'm not ashamed. I'm very young in spirit, but I'm 37 years old, and I'm still doing this, and this is another stage in the development of my dancing, and I'm still growing in it, and I'll never stop doing it. I mean, I'll always do flamenco, and this stage involves me traveling to Sevilla, Spain, which is also known as Seville, and studying the bata de cola, which is the long-tailed serpent dress, which many people consider a dying form within flamenco because it's a very old-fashioned way of dancing, and it's also really difficult. So those dresses are like really, really long and heavy, and there's certain techniques involved in dancing in this dress. And it sounds like a crazy notion to just want to travel all those miles to learn that dress, but that's what artists do, you know.
They learn all aspects.
Yeah, and I'm in love with it. I'm in love with every aspect of flamenco, and this is one that I've kind of saved for last, because there's so many other things to learn in flamenco. Just the footwork alone, I mean, it just took me. I enjoyed every second of it, but the training was intense. So
dancing does seem to be one of those things where it is a very, very demanding, physically and mentally.
Yeah, like ballerinas, you know, or like any type of instrument where after 10 years, okay, cool, you could play now a little bit better, you know what I mean? You can record your first album now. Okay, cool.
Well, yeah,
you
there's
know
like a 10-year rule with instruments, but...
Yeah, like...
But with dancing, it seems to be a lot more intensive.
Well, yeah, because it's physical. It's totally physical, and... the long story short is that I am now 9 days away from finishing my campaign, my Indiegogo campaign. My goal is to raise $10,000. This involves me traveling to Spain, immersing myself in an intensive dance study of this particular form, la bata de cola. While I'm there, obviously becoming masterful at it, and then coming back and producing a show around this particular form. And then after that, also producing a workshop where the funding that I receive will also go towards having a workshop for anybody who wants to come and be either watch it if they feel like it's, you know, they don't want to try it yet, or actually try it and me teach it to them, you know, for like as long, at least 3 to 5 days of that.
Would you say that's a part of the culture around mm-hmm. flamenco, is that sort of passing on of knowledge?
Absolutely. It's how it stays alive. There's no other way. That's how it stays alive. You know, the parents pass it on to their children. The grandparents pass it on to the parents. Teachers pass it on to their students. And this is how it stays alive. And, you know, normally I charge for my classes, but...
well, you have to live.
But I'm doing it kind of like, you know, when people go to, like... Exactly. When people go to an ashram in India and they, like, you know, they take... You know, they take yoga and they meditate and they come back and they share it. You know what I mean? Mm. I'm the initial rite of passage. I'm doing that because I'm learning it myself too. I'm not proclaiming. I am, you know, professional. But this part, I'm humble enough to say that, you know, I need to travel there to learn it and to mm-hmm. study it. And with one or two or three women probably who are still teaching it, and that's it. You know, there's like. That's it. There's nobody else really teaching it anymore. So, I know it's kind of crazy, but I'm excited to see.
To, you know, finally get out there and take another step.
Absolutely.
Are you scared or nervous or anything?
You know what? I'm, yes, I have moments of being afraid because I was telling you guys earlier before we went on air, there's a lot of pressure. Obviously, in this society, and I think everybody feels that, we don't always talk about it, to just, you know, settle and to be safe and to be, you know, to have our home and to have our food every day and to just have our routine and to feel okay with that and to feel like that's mm-hmm. enough. For me, that's not enough, you know, and I know you guys can relate too, and other people out there who are artists can relate.
It's a common trait among all artists.
I agree. I totally agree. We have something to say, and we have, we're passionate, even if it's about the smallest little thing in the world that nobody else knows about, but it means the world to us, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a really specific thing that I'm asking funding for, but yeah, like to me, that just means the world in my next stage in my artistic development, you know? So...
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to take a quick break. We're going to play Las Alfares.
I'm going to butcher the pronunciation. Go for it, man. Las Alfareras.
Alfareras.
It's a tough one, yeah.
We're going to play that, and we're going to come back.
Cool.
Do you have anything you want to say about this track in particular?
This woman is an amazing gypsy flamenco singer. Her name is Montse Cortez, and she's just a great inspiration in flamenco. So I love her. Yeah.
We're going to play this, and we'll be right back to ask a few more questions.
Cool.
Me compré una casa y una casa nueva, mirando hacia la plaza de las alfaberas. Me compré una casa y una casa nueva, mirando hacia la plaza de las alfaberas. Esa para tu pelo te viene.
And we're back. All right. I wanted to ask you just what it was like to grow up in, in that environment.
Sure. I grew up in Delano, California. And this is a farmworking community. My parents, as I mentioned before, are campesinos, which is the word for farm workers, and mainly in the grapes. And growing up, I just knew that there was a burning desire for me and also for my family. I think for all of us, in our family, to succeed and to overcome adversity, and for my parents, for us, their dream was that we would not have to also suffer as they were suffering, although they took it in stride, so they were happy to provide for us, but they faced their challenges clearly, picking grapes, and they were also, we were all part of the United Farm Workers Union, and the farm workers movement during that time, where the farm workers sought to be unionized. So we were all part of that movement, and it was really inspiring to know that your parents cared enough to put their lives out on the line, first by leaving their country, and then second by once they got here, joining a struggle to become a union in a kind of a hostile environment for them. So because we saw this growing up, my brother and my sister and I, we knew that we had to do well. We had to do very well.
It's inspiration when you see your parents, going through so much. It's like you want to make something of it.
Yes, exactly. You do. You want to make your parents proud. And I think everybody goes through that. They want to make their parents proud. But at the same time, my particular history, it just really helped me to value the fact that I was born in the United States, but from, obviously a Mexican family and that had a Mexican culture, but that I also obviously went to school and was learning about American culture and just being raised in it every day, watching TV like everybody else and all that, that I had these two really two places to kind of pull from and to become like this really unique individual. And although it was not well received by my parents, the fact that I wanted to be a flamenco dancer, when I think about it, I'm like, who chooses to be a flamenco dancer and make a living from it? Like, really, who? Like, a handful of us really here in LA, to tell you the truth. Mm. That's it,
It's a specialty.
It really is. But you choose it because, obviously, it calls you. Like, why would I choose something so specific if it clearly did not call me with such, but long story kind of, summing that up, what happened was that they eventually, now they've come around and now they get it, that they understand that the reason that they immigrated was so that we would have the freedom to choose and to live out our dreams completely, because theirs were kind of cut short a little bit because they had to.
I think that's something, like we were talking about, that's an important thing to bring up.
Yeah.
Because it's Youth Arts Underground, so we have to bring it back to arts.
Yeah.
And the one problem with the arts that we always run into is that arts it's not something that produces like a tangible good. It's not like even farming produces food. It's
sure,
a good.
Sure, sure.
It's a necessity.
Yeah.
Arts, it's not like that. We don't produce something that you need to survive.
Right.
So when you say I want to be an artist, it doesn't have, everybody thinks of, when you think of a good career, everybody thinks of doctors and
people
who have knowledge, who like directly contribute.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to advocate for artists, you always have a battle ahead of you because you have to justify that. You have to prove that That's what you really, that's what you need to do.
Yeah, and I think there's that struggle, that battle, like you said, it fuels your art as well.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? And it helps, the art helps you from, it helps you to navigate that struggle and not to feel totally like the world's against you or you've gone mad. Or there's something wrong with you. Because there's not. There's lots of us, trust me. Even
yeah.
Maybe there's just a few flamenco dancers here, but there's lots of artists and we all have that, you know, that bond, that knowing that, you know, there's,
I think,
more.
That's the thing that that interests me,
mm-hmm.
in flamenco, is,
mm-hmm.
it has that, you know, as an illustrator,
yeah.
artist, you know, I'm used to expressing all kinds of emotion. It's mm-hmm. like, 'cause with an illustration, it's... With flamenco, I feel that same way. You can there's this broad,
absolutely.
You know, array of emotion that you can, you know, express,
yes.
just through this one kind of dance.
And I, yes,
and it's so clear and it's so powerful.
Absolutely, and like what you were mentioning before about the whole having something tangible, you know, and how art is sometimes not tangible, but you know. It addresses our humanity in such a way, like our emotions, like what you were saying. It provides like the emotional connection that other things don't provide. And
yeah.
so our for ourselves as we're doing our art, and then when we share that, you know, we share that, that's what it provides to people too. And that doesn't have a price.
Mm.
You know,
that's the other thing about
that's
flamenco,
like,
that,
yeah,
you know, it's sort of unique even among the arts, is
mm-hmm.
you have this this attachment to the dress, to the,
yeah.
to the shoes.
Oh yeah,
it's there's a sentimental attachment to the tools.
Absolutely.
Of the dance. It, you know, when you're talking about, like, you know, like, I don't, going back to,
because yeah.
I'm an illustrator, going back to illustration,
cool.
I don't attach, like, importance
yeah.
to my pencils, because a pencil is something you use and then you get another one.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about, as a dancer,
mm-hmm.
you have this one object that
mm-hmm.
sort of enables you.
Yeah.
It sort of lets you become something else as you dance.
Absolutely. And, like, that's why I actually called it a rite of passage, my project, because it's more than me, it's more than a trip.
Mm.
You know, an excursion to Europe, and it's more than with my backpack, you know. No, I'm not dissing anybody who does that, but anyways, and it's like, it goes beyond the dress, because to me it represents a stage in my maturity, kind of like, you know, growing up as a flamenco dancer, and mm. now growing up also as a woman, you know, because to me they're almost the same. This is how I've been able to fully express with my body, and the body that I have is a female body. I mean, at least this time around. So, and that dress represents the epitome of femininity, wisdom, grace, and that's where I'm at now with my dancing. So it makes perfect sense that I would, because it's never called my attention before, mm-hmm. until recently. I want to share something that's like, probably not the best topic of conversation.
Oh, anything can be a good topic of
yes,
conversation.
Yes.
But since you asked me about, like, growing up, and I do have to say this, because you know what? It happens to a lot of people, and it's good that we speak up about it. And for me especially, it's good to talk about it, because just recently I started sharing this. But growing up, there was a lot of good things, like, you know, like I mentioned, and one thing I didn't say before I get into this is that my parents are also really good musicians themselves. However, they weren't able to pursue that, and they did it more culturally, you know. But so I did grow up around a lot of music and stuff, and so it shouldn't surprise them that this is what I'm doing now. But, you know, the other part of it was that, you know, I, in my family and growing up in general, I was also a victim of sexual and physical abuse. And this happens a lot to people in general, and women specifically, and boys too. So dance for me was a way to express all those feelings that I was afraid to say with words, I chose not to speak, actually, for a really long time. And all I did was dance, you know? I would say from age 9 to, like, 16. I remember just being very introverted. And the only time I expressed anything was dancing. Mm. And I would never even, like, speak, like, at home very rarely. And in dance class very rarely. So it became a way for me to really express those really dark and deep feelings. It's always been that for me. When I found flamenco, that was like even more, it was magnified, because a lot of the themes in flamenco, for example, there's this one palo or rhythm that's called soleá, which is the dance of solitude. There's one that's called the sigrilla, which is the dance of mourning or death. So, and this comes from the gypsies' experience of being, you know, historically a persecuted people, and you know, persecuted and oppressed. And so it was their cry for freedom, flamenco. And it became, at that point, I'm not gypsy, but at that point, thank God that they recorded all these songs, and thank God that it became something that went to the stages for people to see, and that it left Spain, because it made it to me, you know, it made it to me. And once I saw it, it became my cry for freedom as well.
One thing that I've noticed a lot about art, when you look at what it is, it's people working through their problems, yes, and making stories out of it, making, you know, when you're an artist, you make paintings out of it. When you're a writer, you write about it.
Yeah.
And what you notice is the more descriptive the art is, mm-hmm, usually the more odd the person is. When you look at a writer, usually writers are somewhat more odd than illustrators. And usually illustrators are somewhat more odd than, you know, dancers, I guess.
No, I hear you. I hear you.
I think it's a case of, it's always about expressing those problems that you can't talk about. You can't just say.
No.
And so when you're talking about, I think part of the reason for that is when you're a writer, you have to be able to say it. You have to be comfortable. It has to be something that you can say.
Yes.
But if you can't say it, things like dance and things like, you know, paint, they allow you to express that.
Mm-hmm.
Those things that
in a
healthy way. Things that you can't express otherwise.
And that's what I'm saying. And I don't want to sound cheesy, but yeah, it's true. Like, it does help you to express yourself creatively in a healthy way, to where you're not being, you know, and obviously this sounds like the speech that people give you, you know, don't do drugs and all that. But I'm saying that, you know, it's true. Like, you know, it did help me to stay away from all that drama and then just kind of, you know, channel it.
It's just, it offers a form of expression and relief that is incredibly hard to come by.
There you go.
It's a method of support.
Yeah, and it does it for you, first of all, because you're the one who is creating it, and it's coming through you. Mm. But it doesn't end there, and that's what I feel like everyone on the planet needs to realize, that artists are so valuable, because not only, I mean, obviously, they are the artists, but it doesn't end there. All that effect that you just talked about, that healing, that everything, it's like a rippling effect to anybody who comes into contact with you or your art, you know?
And well, it's like when you saw flamenco for the first time.
Oh, exactly.
When you put out a piece of art, you put out an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And people see that, and they try to find their own experiences in that. They try to make it reflect themselves. And in that way, they sort of reshape it.
Yeah.
And when they reshape it, they try to, if they catch on, if they're the sort of person who needs to express their feelings, mm-hmm, and becomes an artist, they take that and they reform it and they put it out again.
Yeah.
And that is that sort of rippling effect where everybody sort of, you know, reverberates, mm-hmm, what you put out. Mm-hmm. Everybody takes it in, and they take in other things, and they, mm-hmm, mix them together, and then they put them out again, and then you take it back in.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, that's something it's so overlooked.
Yeah.
It's so overlooked in, you know, in all the politics and all the talk of, you know, getting a stable career. And it's, you know, we're so obsessed with being the best and being efficient.
Yeah.
And we sort of lose sight of why. Mm-hmm. And art is how you live, you know?
Yeah.
Even ever you need that. You need that connection mm-hmm. that art brings. You
need it to breathe.
Yes.
You need it to survive. And I think that that's something that's undervalued.
Yeah, it is. And it's true. And like, you know, I'm not like, I don't feel like a victim at all. Like, I feel like, you know, more like just happy to talk about it and stuff. But just recently, like, I got an email from someone who I guess was on my mailing list, but I did not know personally. And this was one bad email out of so many wonderful emails that I get. But this one particular one was a woman who just thought it was, like, in her words, disgusting and tacky that I was asking people for money. And, you know, and that I should work for it. That I should not just ask for freebies, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's just missing the whole point completely of what I'm trying to create with my project, you know, on Indiegogo. Because it just reflects, you know, sometimes like the lack of knowledge of other people, of understanding that as an artist, it goes beyond your, you know, personal needs or desires. It goes to the point where, well, at least my project, I know for sure, it goes to the point of, yeah, developing myself, which I think it's perfectly fine and normal for an artist to apply for a grant to develop a work of art or to have a sabbatical. Professors do it all mm-hmm. the time, and they're funded all the time. You know what I mean?
Well, when you talk about a professor, you know, someone who's that, they're researching, they're producing
things.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to what I was talking about, where we don't have the same view of art. We don't have the same view of artists. We have this sort of culture that's built around efficiency and creation.
Right, right.
And you know, beating others.
Yeah.
You know, it's about winning.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's like, I don't feel like we understand even what we're trying to win anymore. When we're so obsessed with doing everything yourself and being independent, but to what end? Why are you trying to be independent?
Yeah.
What are you doing it for?
Yeah,
are you doing it because you need to be independent, because you need that freedom, or you're doing it because someone told you to? And if you're doing it because someone told you to, are you really being independent?
Yeah.
It's like these questions that aren't being brought up, and they're being drowned under. They're being drowned mm-hmm. under, we're not being good enough at math, and we're not doing enough of this, and we're not producing enough goods.
Yeah, there you go.
And
then if you want, you know, and then if you obviously put yourself out there, your art out there, and then you put it out there for funding, because just like anything else, you know, ours are good, legitimate projects that need to be.
Well, it's like you look at Kickstarter, and it's like all of these projects that have gone up on Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a bit removed, but like I'm a games guy. I like video games.
Yeah.
There are projects to make project. You know, there are projects on Kickstarter that would never happen without donations.
Absolutely.
Amazing projects.
Yeah, amazing. And I love that there's...
It's not it's not any more diminished because it's a donation.
No, and I love that it's us, the people who are supporting each other, and not, because I have actually applied for grants and there is a lot of red tape, you know, and oh well, that's just, you know, what you gotta go through sometimes. But the whole Kickstarter, Indiegogo, it's cool because you just go directly to the person. You know, you come up with your idea that you're passionate about, and that is good enough.
Mm.
And then you put it out there for people to fund, you know, and so many success stories. And, you know, I'm excited for this one to be a success, even though there's only 9 days. But, you know, it's not over till it's over. And I just want to give the link really quick. Is that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's www.indiegogo.com. / Flamencas Right, spelled FLAMENCARITE. And yeah, that's, and I think it's cool that these things exist where people can just be passionate about something, a game, a long-tailed flamenco dress, whatever, and
just have something that gives meaning to
me. Yeah, and you know, you would be surprised how many of these projects are funded. You'd be so surprised. It's so cool. I love it.
I think that's the big thing that's happening now is, above all other things, say what you will about the technology age and people being buried in their cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what it's done is sort of, it's connected people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think that there was a period, you know, sort of recently where people have become disconnected. They've lost that, especially in big cities like here in LA, we've sort of lost that personal connection.
Yeah.
And we're sort of regaining that a little bit, bit by bit.
I agree with you, and like I think like now it's just taking on like another form, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know what I mean? And it's like it's like things keep evolving, and as artists we keep evolving, which is why I want to travel to Spain, because I want to keep evolving. I don't want to keep doing the same dance over and over again. You know what I mean? The same number over. No, I'm kidding. But and this whole like connecting, it's like all about, you know, social networking right now. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, the whole obviously being on the radio and like Facebook and Twitter. And yeah, it seems really superficial, but this is giving a way for people to connect throughout the entire universe, throughout the entire world. And
the
that's
way
cool,
I put it
you know?
Is it's like it's like the proof of concept. It's like when you look at, I mean, I don't know, maybe not the best example, but a good example would be the very first, you know, nuclear reaction that generated energy generated half a watt.
Mm-hmm.
The next generator that was produced, I don't know, a year later, produced 2 megawatts. And I'd say Twitter is sort of the equivalent of that. It's like it's a small connection.
Yeah.
But it's the precursor to something more. It's like these projects, these stories of people supporting people.
Who, yeah.
You know, thing when you hear about people who can't pay for their medical bill. It's just this connection that I think is going to grow.
Oh yeah, and I got this like woman like who donated money from who made a contribution from Puerto Rico, and I was like, oh my god, like that's freaking awesome! I got a contribution from Puerto Rico, you know, like.
Yeah. I think technology and connection. I don't know if we could even get into the the sociology behind that. I do want to bring it back. We've been going on for a while.
We sure have. We're getting.
That was great. I think we should. We're gonna take another break. We're gonna take a break.
Yeah.
We're gonna play a couple of songs and we'll get right back.
Yeah.
Because this is an incredibly interesting discussion.
Yes. Definitely.
Next one we're playing Hiere.
Mhm.
And all right. I pronounced it right.
Yeah. No, it's fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those little victories.
Siento un vacío que me lleva ya hasta ti, donde más duele y no sé ya si vivir. Y entre tus manos y el amor que yo te di, mientras mi alma se queda sola y sin ti. Camina entre la nube y el aire que poco a poco se va. Mi mundo se hace pequeño y en la inmensidad siento el agua tan fría y bebo tu boca cuando
somewhere.
And we're back. That was La Rosa Blanca.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know. We're on this roll here. I feel like we're getting sort of away from the topic of, you know, I don't want to take away from talking about, you know, your history, but it's like this sort of topic about art's role in just in all of society, because you think it's like just a, it's hard because I don't know, U.S. culture is so segmented in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
where we're like, we don't really have this, we're not really educated on how other cultures view things or the cultures of other parts. We're very inclusive. It's like when you go to, you know, you go to Japan, or you go to, you know, the Netherlands, it's like they're all learning English and they're all learning world history, and here we're just learning English and we're just sort of learning about us. So when you hear stories about, you know, other cultures and how they, you know, how just how they deal with art,
mm-hmm.
it's this universal thing where it's this intangible. It's this thing where you have these people who need to do it, who need to produce something, who need to, you know, work for something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of confusing. It's like everybody else is like, well, you need to be a doctor. You need to get something stable. You know, why can't you do this? Why can't you do something that, you know, it's like, you know, why can't you like success and money? Well, it's like, because you can't stop.
I think, like, the whole thing about, like, not going crazy, like, being that we're in the United States and that we're artists and that, for example, I'm from, like I said, I was raised in Mexican culture as well as American culture because I'm a Chicana. Is what that they call that. And that whole,
the more you know.
That whole word, and you know, obviously I'm not gonna get totally into it, but it's a word that it's an identity, it's a movement that brought those identities together in order for the person who went through that or who had that experience to not go crazy, really, and to feel like they're experience as was valid, and that you didn't have to choose one or the other. And I think that the not the struggle, but like the kind of, you know, what we have to do here as artists who, like you said, you know, we're living in this society that is very much, you know, produce,
it's utilitarian.
Yeah, money, produce. I'm okay with money. I'm just saying, you know,
well,
I'm not
going to enslave. Bad. It's just enslave. That it's so one. It's so
yeah,
narrow.
I'm not going to, you know, compromise, you know, my art or enslave myself. I'm going to keep my integrity, you know. So exactly. So the way for me, and I think the way for us not to go crazy in, like, as artists and to feel supported and to feel okay being artists in this society is to, we have to become, or I've had to become a hybrid, like literally, to become a hybrid of my art, my culture, my spirit, my artistic spirit, and, you know, the other values in American culture, which are the ones that maybe I don't love, are not dear to my heart, but, or don't necessarily support my artist side, but if I become a hybrid and if I decide to end the struggle of having to choose one or the other and just come up with something, and it's true, and I've made peace with it, and you know what? I didn't always feel this way. I'm not saying I'm settling or choose, and I just can't choose. There's no way. It's like, there's no way to choose. You know what I mean? I'm not Spanish, but I'm doing something from Spain, you know? Mexican, but that has, like, some Spanish in it. But some Mexicans are like, why are you doing that? You know, that's from Spain. You're supposed to do Mexican things. Yeah, but I was born in the United States. Well, yeah, you're being too Mexican. Then you need to be more American, you know? And so I've decided,
you need to eat more hamburgers.
Yeah, or exactly. Or like, which actually I adore. And it's like, and then it's like, you know, you're an artist, but you have to develop your business sense. Like, if you're ever going to make it, you know? And, or, oh, you know, you're too much into the marketing aspect of it. You're not being, you know, artistic enough. So I've decided to end the suffering and the neurosis that is produced from all this. Okay. And this is like at 37, after a lot of neurosis, you know, not clinically, obviously, just diagnosed, just that whole struggle you were talking about. So I feel like at one, now I'm just a really, an interesting hybrid, an interesting mix, and my art has become that. And I think that's where the best art comes from, to tell you the truth. Mm. Yeah, from not having to choose, from this is the world we live in, and so let's see. How are we going to create this art without actually going nuts? And artists do go nuts, actually, all the time, because they feel they have to choose, and they do choose. You know, I'm not choosing. I decided.
I've always, there was one of my favorite teachers. He said that art is sort of, it's a kind of magic.
Yeah.
And it is sort of like that. It's sort of it requires a certain mindset. It requires a certain obsession, a certain special blend of, you know, crazy and smart.
Yeah. Totally.
And you know, not it's hard. It is really hard to be able to balance that obsession with, you know, your pocketbook, essentially. Yeah. You know, to be able to do what you need to do and still do what you're compelled to do.
Yeah.
It's, and a lot of people can't do that. You know, when you look at, I can't remember. It's this amazing, it's this great 3D animation about one of the pioneers, like this amazing Canadian animator. Cameron right now, if he's listening, my brother probably is yelling the name at the screen, but he was this amazing animator who made all these great, abstract pieces, all these great abstract works that influenced, you know, all the people after him. But he just couldn't take that kind of pressure. Mm-hmm. He couldn't take the, because animation is such an intensive thing, you have to sort of put everything into it. It takes so much time to produce, you know, just a small amount. Yeah. And he couldn't take it. Mm-hmm. And he ended up becoming homeless.
Yeah.
Because he just couldn't take the stress of, like, living anyway. It burnt him out.
And you know what? Those because of, sometimes we have to be so isolated to create our art. Sometimes we don't realize that there are other tools and that there is support out there for you not to feel, not to, because I've been very, you know, close to, you know, being in a situation like that. Where you do have to open yourself up to the fact that not compromise myself at all, but kind of like when you cook something, you know what I mean, or something, it's like you could just have the pure art, the pure this, the pure that, but then if you, I don't know, that wasn't a good analysis.
This
that
is
had
the
nothing to do
hour.
With the whole cooking thing, but I guess I'm hungry. But what I was trying to say is just there's tools out there, trust me, because and I think it's important to share them. You know, like the whole marketing thing on social media, to where you don't have to totally, I have found a way not to compromise in my integrity. Mm. And still be on this planet, in this society, and still do what I do, mm-hmm. and not water down my art. And you know what? There's such a lack of support for us that we do think that it has to be one or the other, and the pressure is so great that things like that happen all the time to artists. And there's resources out there. We just are not always aware of them because, you know, we isolate ourselves to create the art, but also because it's not always a supportive environment. Mm. Also, but trust me, I have dug deep. I've looked for all these resources, and if anybody ever needs like help in kind of like how the hell am I gonna get this? I'm not like a certified life coach. However, I've had a lot of experience in being an artist and dealing with all the challenges that comes with. So
when it comes to being a certified life coach, I just like to add that I think a few life coaches could use life coaches.
Yeah. So trust me, like there's a way. So don't ever get discouraged is what I have to say. I mean, you're going to get discouraged. Don't ever let that stop you. Don't ever let
use it,
you know, that stop
use
you.
Use it as something to push ahead. It's like I don't want to go into another analogy. I just want to say that you have to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that you're always going to be best at.
That's the thing you're going to be best at. And you know what? If you need money for it, thank goodness there's things like Indiegogo now. There's things like Kickstarter. There's tons of things out there. So don't freak out about not having the support, because it'll show up. It'll come out of the woodwork. You know what I mean?
If you search hard enough.
If you search hard enough, and if you just...
The searching will be... Yeah. It can be the hardest part.
Yeah, and you stay open to it. You know what I mean? And it's a life lesson that you signed up for, being an artist. So, you know, you just got to keep that in mind.
Wow, this is getting heavy.
I know. I gotta... I have to go have a hamburger. I really do.
Yeah, I think we're all.
I have to teach a dance lesson. At 3. I have to keep.
Yeah,
you know?
I think we've covered pretty much every topic.
But I'm loving it, you guys. I want to come back and talk to you.
This was probably the best discussion that I've had.
Probably been one of the coolest.
And I totally don't say that every week.
Thank you. I think you guys are really cool.
This was an amazing discussion.
I love that you guys are doing this. Thank you. Thank you, Pam, for inviting me to come. Pam was one of my students, and she really just took to flamenco, and she was she's gonna tell her own story one day, but I'm just saying that, you know, she's going through some hard stuff, and I just I know that she just expressed during our little break that we had here that you know, having a creative outlet like flamenco dance has really helped her along. So whatever you do, just don't think you have to be professional at being an artist. Don't think anything. Just do it because it makes you feel good. Do it for yourself. And, you know, and everybody else will benefit along the way. Trust me. And doors will open for you. And sometimes it doesn't feel that way. But I really have a lot of faith in that. And I also have a place to live. And I'm not homeless. And I eat every day. So it's totally possible.
Nice.
And support my project on Indiegogo, A Flamenca's Rite of Passage. Por favor. Gracias.
All right. I think that's it. We're going to play one more song.
Yay. Right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
Aprender a escuchar, las palmas suenan sorditas, muy despacito a compás, y ahora viene uno la tiempo que te hace yo.
Sin esperarme un día, me encontré contigo. Cantaba por volar y como recuerdo, de nuevo vivo esa noche cuando mis ojillos cierran.
Vivimos y sentimos, cada momento vivimos y sentimos, que corta se me hace la noche que cuando me junto. Vivimos y sentimos, cada momento vivimos y sentimos, que corta se me hace la noche que cuando me junto.
Escribir lo que siento cuando los ojos te miro y palabrillas no encuentro, y tengo miedo al decirlo, y cómo puede ser verdad que más que nadie me quiera, porque yo fui la primera. Porque cada vez que canto tus ojos lloran de llanto, no sé si es peor.
escuchar. Palmas suenan sorditas, muy despacita compás. Cada bien uno la tiempo. ¿Qué estás
vivimos y sentimos? Cada momento vivimos y sentimos. Que cortase más en la noche que cuando me duro. Vivimos y sentimos. Cada momento vivimos y sentimos. Que cortase más en la noche que cuando me duro. Vivimos y sentimos. Cada momento vivimos y sentimos. Que cortase más en la noche que cuando me junto. Vivimos y sentimos. Cada momento vivimos y sentimos. Que cortase más en la noche.